You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. Yeah, we're really here. I am your host, JD. We've got Nicole Hale. We've got Chris McFeely. And Chris Triplett is out this week, but we're going to power on. So therefore, we have Ken.
Yo.
Eugenio Ken from Twitter and also from the famous Superhero Time, which apparently has more people.
Infamous.
More people, yeah, infamous probably more likely.
I think it's a better way to put it.
Yeah. Well, they do have more listeners than we do, so, you know. Hi, Ravage. Thank you for joining
Stop
us on the show.
Bringing that up every
day. See, I don't bring it up.
It's a he fun.
Bring it up. He brings it up.
I bring it up. It's just
a dope show.
You know. But see, it's a secret little thing because I'm actually on both shows, so it's kind of like, it's both a point of, like, disappointment for the show that I host, but it's also, like, kind of a point of a pride for the other show that I'm on. So, anyway.
Yeah, but, Barricade64 is happy that Ken's here, so
yay.
You got a fan,
see? Ken. There you go, Ken. Barricade
there is
your
only
fan.
One Toku podcast, you know. That's your only choice. You got no choice.
Really, how, yeah.
There's at least one other decent one. One decent. One good one.
There is one different one.
Yeah,
have many choices in comic book podcasts.
Yeah, I know. It is.
I'm listening to us.
Everybody and their brother has a comic book podcast. And nobody has a Tokyo show because nobody watches it. So anyway, I'm back. I'll just quickly mention that I had some medical stuff going on, which is going to cause a slight, very small change of format. We're going to take a mini break starting from now on in the middle of all the shows. So thank
sure
you.
Brian can queue up some kind of hilarious commercial for the podcast version to go in between the two.
Yeah, and by Brian, you mean me. But yes, yes, I will queue up something. Something fun and interesting. I'm thinking actually about maybe putting in advertisements for local comic shops or something, maybe. So, you know, if you've got a shop that you want to shout out, send it to us on the contact link or something. Because, you know, that's something I think that I like to do is support local shops, and because I love mine. So
my local comic book guy is awesome.
Yeah, and seeing the Nicole loves hers. And Chris, I think, has a good one.
I am my local comic book.
You're your own pusher.
That's bad.
I don't know much about drugs, but I've heard that you're not supposed to use what you sell. Chris, what are you doing?
You know, all the best dealers are just dealing to feed their own habit.
Yep. That's the way.
Yeah.
So we'll take a small break in the middle of the show. And that should be the only, you know, major change that it'll cause for me. Hopefully, this will be like a wake-up call for me and I'll actually lose weight, like something I've been talking about doing. But I'm not going to make
that
any...
get the skinnies coming back?
Well, I'm definitely not promising that, but it's possible. I know Brian's actually doing some stuff too, but no, we'll put it this way. I probably gained about 100 pounds in the last year or so. And, you know, what happened is I had a blood clot. So, if you have a blood clot and it doesn't turn into like dying, then that's sort of like your wake up call. That's sort of like, all right, this is it, buddy. if you make it through this, this is when you're supposed to fix stuff. So we'll see.
Good luck with your new road to new life.
I hope so. I did mention on Twitter the other day, maybe over Facebook or Twitter, that I saw a commercial for the Wendy's Baconator, which is like two patties of meat and like eight pieces of bacon and cheese and stuff. And like a few weeks ago, I think I would have looked at that and went, yeah. Now I kind of look at that and go, that will go in my arteries.
You know what is so funny? This is so weird. This is the second time in 2 hours the Baconator has been mentioned to me.
Hmm.
People keep mentioning the Baconator to me this week for some
reason. There's a couple ads
this
out.
This is the first time hearing of it, but I'm interested.
Well, yeah. Because Dave Wallace from Moonbase 2, he came to New York and he had one. Because I guess you guys don't have Wendy's over in Europe. So,
no, we do not.
No.
So he decided to try it out.
Yeah, literally it's like, it's two pieces of two patties, like three pieces of cheese, eight slices of bacon, and ketchup and mayonnaise, I think, is what's on this thing.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and...
that rubbish.
Yeah, and so... Woo! I mean, they were delicious, but man, I just can't. I just can't
if
do
you go
it
to
anymore.
Wendy's, if you go to Wendy's, if you're, and if you're... If you ever come to America to go to eat at Wendy's, get the chili. The best.
Chili's good. Chili's good. So, anyway, enough about all that stuff. Let's talk about comic books and stuff. We're behind a week as well. So, what do we have, Chris McFeely? What's in the way of news, sir?
You think for being behind a week, there'd actually be some news, but there's not.
No? WonderCon this weekend or MegaCon?
I think there
were
a few things announced there at the South by Southwest convention. I think that's what it was.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the thing.
Was last weekend, and that's basically already practically happened already.
The Comixology got torpedoed.
The new Zack Snyder and Zack Snyder? Scott Snyder. Jesus.
Oh, wow.
Scott Snyder and Jim Lee Superman book is going to be called Superman Unchained.
Wait, not Man of Steel?
No, that would be too... That'd be too smart for
that.
DC.
Would make sense.
That would be too much of an intelligent cross marketing approach. Don't try to
don't cash in or anything. You know.
And that's happening in June, along with the previously announced Greg Pak Superman and Superman Batman.
Mm.
Has there been anything else announced? No, we don't. The Larf Lees, and we talked about the new Green Lantern creative teams and
Marvel destroyed Comixology.
Let's give a moment of silence for the comic book or the cartoon that was.
Oh,
yes. I haven't watched the end yet, but that's next on my watching list. Marvel Young Justices over yesterday and today.
Marvel obliterated Comixology last week.
Somebody did upload
the piece of news. Really, was Marvel's announcement? frankly. I was really tremendously disappointed. The announcements that Marvel had been trailing, we'd seen the Marvel First, the number one made up of all the names.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
52 claw marks. And then we got one more, which we would have talked about last week, but it was called Project Gamma, and it had like an audio wave fluctuating behind it. And all three of those were revealed at South by Southwest last week to all be about digital stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not saying digital is bad or smells funny or mother is a whore or anything like that.
You're not biased at all, are you?
I was a little bit disappointed to find out that all the announcements were that the 52 claw marks is there's going to be Marvel Infinite Comics weekly now, which is, we remember Infinite Comics were the things that were originally... I think the only ones, the first ones they did were through AVX AR content. They did a couple of those in the course of Avengers versus X-Men. So now there's going to be a new one every week, and they're starting off with a Wolverine series. That's what the claw marks were about.
Uh-huh.
And the Marvel First, the number one, was that they were going to be... Well, no, do it in another order. The Project Gamma thing is that they're going to start adding sound effects and audio and music and things to their, I presume, their Infinite Comics. Create a more immersive experience. Just make cartoons, if that's what you want to make. the Marvel First thing was that they were going to offer over 700 free issues on Comixology. Now, that piece of news was actually, I think, a camouflaged announcement that Marvel was planning to launch a DNS attack on Comixology servers.
Yeah. What started out as like a cool way to give away a bunch of free comics turned out to be a way to basically perform thermonuclear destruction on Comixology.
I'm not sure if they were all number one issues or not.
Yeah, no, there were some others.
Are there 700 first issues?
No, it's. I mean, it was a bunch of stuff, but there.
Well,
that was like
how often they relaunch stuff.
There was a lot of stuff that was first issue, but well, he's got a good point. But yeah,
well,
no,
people were able to get the stuff they. I mean, it only lasted until it was announced on Sunday, and then it was over on Tuesday. It wasn't a long running thing. It was only supposed to be a 2 day thing, and
it was up for about 12
so
hours total.
Died.
It was like that went up, and I mean. How, you know, in this day and age, like, how do companies still manage to so grossly underestimate demand, especially when you make stuff free on the internet? I mean, it's like...
I don't know. I mean, the Comixology does put things up for free regularly and has lots of sales. And I think in this case, this was a I'll give them the benefit of the doubt on this one, honestly. This did seem like a legitimately huge response to something that... Probably with well, it just goes to show you, I guess, how much of an audience there is out there who are still willing to try something new, despite what a lot of sales might indicate.
Well,
I hope that a lot of people tried out a lot of the new Marvel stuff.
It's about, I think, it's about market penetration, though, in the sense that those yes, there are free issues almost every week, and there's tons of free stuff on there, or there's sales, but it's a little bit different. Like when the company throws out a number like 700 free comics,
that's
you know.
True.
It's like when you throw that out, you've got to expect when you have a big press release, especially at South by Southwest, which is a big like tech, you know, there's a lot of, you know, very tech savvy people that get involved in that. So I think you've got to expect that there is going to be just a huge response, especially from, you know, from first time people who've never tried it before. But yeah.
Chat is saying it was all number ones, apparently.
Oh, wow.
They ended it early, too, and said they were sorry. I'm just reading another article here alongside it. It says, apparently it was virtually every number one currently for sale digitally by the publisher, from Fantastic Four number one all the way up to current
Month.
No,
seriously. Yeah, they could definitely have enough to cover
that. Yeah, that tells you a lot about how many number ones they have.
Yeah.
So
you know what? Am I interested? Because I know a lot of people, my friend put this up on her Facebook page, are like, oh, look, free comic books for download. People see that word, and they're going to go read it. And these are people who are like, oh, I'm going to go check some stuff out that have never even picked up a comic book in their life. So who knows? This might get a lot more new readers.
Yeah, I mean, I think as people have picked up more like Kindles or Nooks or things that are able to access those kinds of things, or you know, even their phones and things, you know, smartphones have become so prolific. And it's like, oh, I can just download this app and then I can get free stuff? Sure, you know.
You know, it does raise one of those issues that often comes up. Well, doesn't come up as much, but it used to. Whenever people talk about digital comics, which was when the server crash happened, it meant that people were unable to access things that they had purchased.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, if you didn't have the download.
I've got this copy of Avengers number 7 in my hand. That's not going no place. That's right.
Right.
I can read that whenever I want, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I think
the items people had downloaded to their devices, as I understand it, not being somebody who has gone in for any of this, the general idea is that you can download items to your device.
Right.
In the app to read, and then they are... returned, I think, after a period of inactivity, are automatically returned to the cloud,
right?
As they say. And as I understand it, you know, people were not able to access things that they did not have at that time downloaded to their devices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably the first time that's ever happened in a major way. But it's funny, there was a similar case now. Oh, what was this? The name of the company was? It's just gone under. Let me just look it up here. It was a Japanese manga company, a digital thing. I cannot remember the name of the company at all, but it was like just announced just this week, and it does mean that everybody who bought the items digitally through this particular company has now lost. Their items just lost them outright. J-Manga. There it is. J-Manga.
Tokyo Pop? Was it Tokyo Pop?
No, that was years ago. Tokyo Pop didn't even make it digital before.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
Well, I'm just reading off the suggestion. I'm reading off the Stay Lucky or Viz?
J-Manga. J-Manga was the name of the company. It was
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's that's some of the risk I think that we do run, and that's why this, you know, I think that's why any discussion about digitally available products always like has that undercurrent of DRM free, because, you know, if you still buy a digital product, you still have that sense that you want to own the product. And that's exactly why you don't want the source of the product to go under and then lose your stuff. You want to still be able to download it and keep it. So, yeah, and I think that that's why any discussion of, you know, of a company that is offering digital stuff like that, you know, should come with that DRM free tag or discussion as well. You know, these are things that I think, you know, yeah, there's going to be bumps in the road. You know, Comixology, I don't know. I mean, Marvel has its own digital. And the nice thing about Marvel is that if you use your digital code from the books, like when you, the ones that you get from the books, or even that you buy at Marvel, it basically gives you the copy as well over at Comixology.
Yeah.
So Marvel's probably not going anywhere anytime soon. So with that amount of crossover, you're kind of covered. But yeah, I'm, you know, I would be leery of a lot of stuff that you would buy at Comixology long term for that reason. But
how a lot of people put it is, and I think maybe people put it this way when they want to particularly denigrate the process, but it's not exactly an inaccurate summation of it, is that you're not really buying it, your license, you're leasing,
you're buying
it,
you're buying access to it.
Right.
You're buying access to it. Yeah, you're which buying is, a lease, well, to be able to get
for some, that, for this, something like that, you definitely want to,
well,
have it long term.
Yeah.
I don't
especially,
know.
Especially when like new books come out and the prices aren't that much different.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, we get into a whole, like, this like gets into a whole larger discussion of how copyright works and lots of other things as well. I'm one of those.
That is why they don't make the files straight downloadable, so people cannot simply download the file and then immediately share it. A little bit of effort has to be gone into by pirates to.
Yeah.
Well, and like, okay, like
the files to spread.
Like, I'm one of those weird people that, like, here's like my view on it, and no one agrees with me, so I don't like have any kind of. But it's like, I don't like the concept of like loaning books. For that reason, because it's like, if someone created that product was meant to be sold to a person. So if you buy that product and then share it with everybody, then what amount, the creator only got the value for what was sold for the original product. You know, they're not getting, you know, yeah, and that's what I'm saying. And so it's like, even if you loan a book to someone else, even though it's like, I buy a book and then I let you read it. Well, now, you know, the creator only got money from me, but the other person still got the full value of the book. So if I pay $10 for a book and I let you read it, now the creator has lost $10.
That's a bitch.
Yeah. They've lost, you know, or the company or whoever would get
that
money.
So you're saying that the number one thing against creators is libraries.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's an outdated, to me, in like in this country, it's sort of an outdated concept, because libraries were sort of a way to provide, because books were so rare. You know?
I go to the library at least twice a week.
Yes, and you're stealing. But you're a thief.
I mean, digital comics are still like really, really young in their whole, in terms of being prolific at all. So it's kind of like the same thing, like they. Music industry and all that had to learn. It's like iTunes eventually has made their stuff DRM free for the most part.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a learning process. Eventually something.
The pricing. Well, and that's what's happened to music. It's like
part of it. Yeah.
The pricing had to come down to a point where you hit a break point where the cost of stealing the product becomes greater than the value of just downloading it. You know
time
what I mean?
Is money.
It's like, exactly. So it's like, I can go here and pay a dollar and get a song. Well, that's much less complicated than doing an internet search and finding the thing and then downloading
hoping the torrent is seated.
Hoping it's there. Yes, exactly.
And I mean, the reason we cannot have that at the minute, because if not just Marvel, but if companies make the digital option cheaper, that is cutting the legs out from under comic stores and the direct market.
And so I think they've, but I think they've and that's why I say I think they've done the right thing by making it for the stuff that's same day digital. It's the same price.
Yeah.
And then after a period of time, you cut the price because
times will change when it will get to a point where it won't be anymore. But we're not there yet.
And no,
it will
no.
Like, it has happened with.
But then the other option is then you can cut the cover price of the book, and then hey, there's a crazy idea: make the book itself more affordable. Can you imagine if the cover prices of books went down,
and then digital prices went up?
Well, I mean, no, but I'm saying like if. If like the comic book paper price went down, you know, to like a more reasonable thing, we've watched it balloon, you know, over the last, you know, couple of decades, but that would be crazy. Anyway, this
that's
is all
supplementing. I mean, Gruffluck has made the point here in the chat that in the UK, an author gets something like 13p when a book is loaned from a library.
Really?
Yeah, but they don't
get a percentage.
Yeah, they don't necessarily get that. Here, I don't think.
Well, that's America, where everything is about everyone not giving anything.
Yeah, and so
it's whenever you pick something up off the shelf, and if that's not what the price was on the shelf, why do you want more?
God.
Well, and that's what I don't. Well, yeah, but see, that's what I don't get. It's like some people are like, "Well, you're stealing music." It's like, "Yeah, but you loaned that book to somebody." Like, well, yeah, that's I own the book. No, you don't. You read the book. The value of a book is in the material that you read, right? You read it, therefore, that was the price that you paid. That's like why all the digital book stuff, anyway, it's a whole...
I don't know, I apply a certain amount of value to a tangible product, personally.
But that's not what the product is. The book isn't the product.
Because that is really very much at the heart of the argument over why digital things should be cheaper. Because people do... whether they do it willfully or not, they do ascribe greater value to possessing a physical copy of something than they do to the experience.
And there is a good argument that for that, though, which is that if you are distributing it digitally, there's less of a chance, not great, but there's less of a chance that you're going to be able to freely share that material with other people. You know, you're more likely to keep your own digital material than you are to, like, share it.
Absolutely, yes. I'm not going to. It's actively easier for me to hand a physical object to a friend instead
correct.
Of no. I'll put it in Dropbox, and then if you go into and put the and then you can.
right, exactly. Yes, I mean you can do that, but that's not likely.
People who file a share are the you know, people who actively go out there and make these things available are the dedicated.
Right. So that's why I say if you buy a book, I think if you buy a physical book, I think that higher price in some ways should be compensating for the fact that you can then turn around and sell it. I mean, you buy a book for $10, then you turn around and turn it back in for $3. Well, you just – and someone else is going to buy it for more, but the original creator isn't going to get any more – you know what I mean? Like, that's a whole, like, 50%.
Well,
I don't
this
know.
Is
anyway.
Not comic book themed at all, but this...
But it's... Well,
the way, just when you're putting this forward, I want to ask you then, what is your opinion on the possibility of next-gen video game consoles not allowing second-hand games?
I completely agree with that. I mean, that's... I think that's exactly the thing. Now, again, I think the corresponding thing should be that the price of the game should go down. Because if you're going to say, okay, we're making it so that the games can't be, you know, can't be resold. Okay, cool. Then drop your price because you're guaranteeing that you're not losing out in the second market. Therefore, you need to drop the price in order to make it, you know, more convenient. And the fact that a lot of the next gen systems are based on regular computer architecture, I think is going to make it, I don't know, it seems like, well, I guess if you've got codes, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. But if you're asking my,
I'm just asking.
Yeah, but if you're asking my opinion, I'm totally fine with that. I am totally fine with that.
What then of the retailer?
I think that
this recession economy.
Well,
what of the retailer who is losing a method of income?
You know, things come and go, man. I mean, if games are going to be available through digital, if they're going to be available through, you know, through large vendors. And the price is going to be GameStop and GameStop and stuff. Sorry, I mean that's just the way the market is. Things change, times change. You know, I mean, how I don't have a milkman that comes to my fucking door every week. You know, just because that's not, you know.
I don't.
Well, okay, but you live in a third world country, but.
on his horse-drawn cart, the butter and the bread as well.
I'm from with a few people that have access to electricity, and
you know. I mean,
don't tell anyone, for Christ's sake.
In America, we don't like make dinner on like the Dutch oven at the fire, you know. but I mean, but my point is that times change, industries change, distribution change. You know,
video games, though, I think I just want to read that was debunked for the PS4. Although I don't think anybody's.
I think so I had heard that the PS,
the PS4 isn't quite there yet.
Going to be true for the PS4.
I mean,
but nobody knows what Microsoft's doing yet.
But Microsoft is still kind of talking about going that direction.
The kind of thing that I would believe.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, that goes right along with the way their software and stuff works too. So, so that makes sense. But I mean, again, this is we're out of sight of the realm of comics. And I say that as a dude that, I mean, the comics become a little bit different because there's in some ways. You know, you get into like the second market and there's like a collector's market and stuff. And a lot of that is how local comic shops keep going. So that's that's where it gets a little sticky, you know, because it's like I just bought a comic, you know. Yeah, I bought an old comic for $300. OK, you know, but I stole it because someone else read it, you know, and Marvel didn't get a cut of that $300. So, you know.
But then there is that collector's market.
But it is a collector's market.
Yeah.
Well,
like I said, but you're a fan of Iron Man, so you're not just going to buy, you know, even though this is a used comic, you're going to buy other merchandise that has Iron Man on it.
I tell you what, I'll send Marvel a check for the cover price, which is 12 cents.
There you go.
So I will send them a check.
Got a question for you then. So does that mean that comic book artists might have to get a little more creative with the way that they, I mean, what was it, Batman number 5, where you had to actually turn the comic book around because he was like spiraling?
Oh,
down.
To kind of like block the digital.
I think it goes both ways. In that, I always enjoy it when I read a comic where the artist or the writer or whoever has found something new to do with the page, like J.H. Williams' Batwoman. Still consistently finds new things to do. And I like it whenever they do things that are only possible because you're physically holding a cup. Like Dr. Manhattan, number 4, just from a week or two ago.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works in digital.
Because
that's half the, but what, a third of the comics upside down and the two times flowing back and apart from one another. But at the same time, like, digital as a platform, also, you know, just, never mind any enthusiasm I have for the subject or not, it does need to realize that it is not beholden to a page that size. You know,
right,
it can't
be
whatever shape or size it needs to be. And if it can find ways to work around that, sure, you know. I mean, I have heard some people speak highly of the guided view that lets you move from panel to panel because it does it just leads you through the artwork instead of you having to figure it out or whatever. But that's because the artwork has been laid out in such a way as it would be on a page in front of you instead of on a screen or in sections, you know.
Yeah, and I don't know.
There are ways for them to do different things with the different mediums.
Yeah, and I think... Go ahead.
I was just saying, like, going off of what McPhilia said, like, with digital, yeah, you get the panel by panel, but, like, when you're actually reading a comic book and you come across that two-page splash, that's one of the best things, and you open it up and, like, boom, right in your face, you're like,
yeah, and that's really hard to do with an e-reader because you only get like half at once.
It's
like,
it on its side.
Or it's really small, and then you're trying to turn it, and you know. So I think the bigger tablets make that a little bit easier, but it's still something
it
that
does really go to highlight just what level of infancy digital is actually in.
Correct.
And how much it is secondary to and beholden to what the physical comics do.
Yeah, I mean, and physical comics are still
that we can really talk about things changing. Yeah.
And I think that's why there may be a little bit of this future in this, like, for digital comics, like these comics that are, I mean, it's not to say that comics made available to digital will go away, and that's not that that's bad, but I'm saying I think we'll see a little bit of this, like, crossover area where it's like you'll see comics that are produced for digital you know, and be produced in such a way, and then maybe they'll be available in like a trade or something at some point. You know what I mean? But
I don't know how the Marvel Infinite comics actually work if they were different to an ordinary comic layout or anything. Mm-hmm. But I know that they were collected in print for the Avengers versus X-Men graphic novel collection. They did mm-hmm. they did release print editions of them. So I mean, they're obviously still produced in such a way that mm-hmm. they can be rendered in print, you know.
Yeah.
And of course DC collects nearly everything that it I mean that's I don't quite know if we're supposed to be running around flailing our arms over the news that Marvel's going to release a new digital comic every week when I was like I don't DC release like 6 or 8 a month
yeah digital? They've been doing they've been doing
they
tons.
So many things that they're releasing digital first and are then you know and that's not, I mean they collect 2 issues of their digital first things into one print collection for $4. You know, yeah. So that's
like with kind of Smallville like and Arrow and all
Smallville,
that.
Arrow, Little yep. Gotham, what
Batman
else is
Beyond?
There? Batman Beyond Unlimited, yeah. Batman Arkham Unhinged, Legends of the Dark Knight.
There's like Superman coming back. Up also.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, oh, that's another bit of news that we didn't talk about. No, the Orson Scott Card story.
Yes, I'm so glad you remembered that.
Number one, we'll move off this digital shit.
Yeah, okay, that's, I mean, it's cool stuff. We can't resolve it on this show, but good discussion.
It hasn't been pulled because DC have said no, but because the artist Chris Sprouse has pulled out of drawing the story, and now they don't have anybody to draw it. So it's not going to be in the first issue.
Yeah.
And you know what? The other story in the issue is going to be written by Jeff Parker, so I'm actually going to buy that now. I'm going to buy the print edition of that comic now,
yeah.
willfully and happily. And I will not buy issue 2, probably, because I don't care about Superman very much. I'm just going to buy that, just print it.
I'm concerned and interested, though, because, you know, in the sense, you know, DC still hasn't really latched on to say, okay, we're going to cut him. But I think it would be interesting if there were enough artists to take a stand and say, yes, but I'm not going to work with him. You know,
I'd say that story will probably never see print because no artist in their right mind is going to want to touch it now.
Yeah, who's going to be the scab
that's
going to take that?
That's a poison chalice. Nobody is going to want that shit.
Yeah.
Nobody wants any of that. Unless there is some other, you know... horrible homophobic bigot out there who is going to go, yes, Orson, I will draw your story.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, though, like I said. If
those people are just intolerant.
If they can find some scab to come in and do it, but, ah, man.
Yeah, I don't see that happen. Yeah, I don't see that happen.
Yeah.
In desperate times, people will do anything for a job.
Yeah, there's a lot of starving artists out there. I don't want to, like, they're like, can I do it under a pseudonym?
Like, the cost of having other jobs.
Can I? I'll draw it, but can my name be like Arnold Guntherson or something?
I'd be surprised though if DC just sort of put it
quietly, just not mention it ever again.
Just they would be better to just pay off whatever his minimum contract is and just be
well,
like,
I'm sure he's
sorry.
Been paid for it already. Like he received the work, so
yeah.
I'm sure he paid. It's just
yeah.
Yeah,
I'm glad you mentioned that because that was the one other thing that I did want to mention. So I'm kind of torn because I'm still like, you guys were gonna put him on. It's not like they made the moral choice to not put him on the book. It's like the artist had to finally pull out to like make it not happen.
Yeah, but a statement is still made by my purchasing of it.
So. Yeah. Okay. So you know,
for me.
I might buy it even though I don't like Superman.
Prime Gundam notes in the chat, you underestimate douchebags, I see.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Sad but true.
It's possible. I mean, that's why I say it's, you know, like Nicole said, it's, they're starving people. It's like, can I be like Richard Richardson?
Well, the thing is, I've worked for a lot of crappy bosses. I've worked for, I actually worked for a guy that threw a metal letter opener at me, okay?
Whoa.
He about tried to kill me, okay? But I still needed a freaking job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. It'd be true. All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of new stuff that we talked about right there.
Yeah, wasn't much of it, but there was discussion.
There was a good
there.
Discussion there. I like that. I like when we can do that.
I like whenever we can pull something like that out that's not about how somebody drew tits too big one time or something.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes we have to do that too, but, you know, but this was like more of a, you know, we're economic, we're discussing copyright, all kinds of exciting things. Good stuff. I like it.
It's something
just,
slightly
just
different.
Get JD
different.
Involved with, just don't get JD on the topic of good-looking pilots.
Okay.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I did show that to
So anyway, there were some other comics that came out this week.
All right, we'll move on. I mentioned that on Twitter, so we're good there. Anyway, all right, so since Ken is filling in for Chris Triplett, Ken is going to go first this week. So what?
Yeah, filling in for Chris Triplett. I'm doing Spider-Man.
Don't screw this up.
That is true. Wow.
Genu.
Man.
Okay, so let's see. Touch on last week's Superior Spider-Man. Was it number 6, right?
Yes.
5?
Yes.
6?
5.
5, 6?
5.
It was 5. 6 is this week. 5 is this week.
Is that 5?
It was 5.
Oh, yeah, it is 5. Okay, yeah, you're right. Number 5, where they open up with, well, the place that massacred the previous issue was a McDonald's knockoff. And its CEO is...
I looked at all these names. Was it McBurger or something?
Yes.
Burger.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, and the CEO is, you know, trying to cover her ass because all she's concerned about is the fact that every time her company comes up, well, all they're concerned about is the fact that people got brutally murdered there.
This has happened a few times too, because there have been, like, this is, you know, this is sort of art imitating life, because there have been massacres. I think there was one at Burger King several years ago, and McDonald's about 20 years ago. So, I mean, these are not, like, you know, unheard of things.
And then who pops up behind her but Massacre himself, saying, I'll wear your rival's logo and go kill a bunch of people in... where was it? Madison Square.
No. Time
Central Station.
Central Station.
Grand Central. Yeah.
And,
I mean,
and didn't they just leave that for a minute?
I mean, this is the thing I love about Massacre.
Yeah,
that
only he could come up with that. You know.
I mean, I
know.
It's so. But it's like, that's the thing. It's like he has no emotion, and that's what makes him super creepy too. Because
it's a brilliant move, but it's like, holy crap.
The dialogue,
what's going on in Dan Slott's head?
You know, I like to hear, I mean, I hear voices in my head anyway, but it's like, I like to think about his delivery, and I just imagine it being like the most straightforward, monotone. Yeah, I mean, it's like he could be talking about, you know, how to put together a VCR or something, you know, and it's like, no, he's talking about gunning people down, and, you know, it's like, just in the most matter-of-fact way.
Yeah, so...
He's got a little more mileage in him than that poker face character who you remember appeared in Iron Fist and Power Man the same week that that Massacre first appeared in Spider-Man.
Oh...
Yeah.
Both characters had had shrapnel through the brain that cut out their ability to form emotional connections.
Wow. Yeah, he's done a little better than that, sort of.
I forgot about that.
But his name is not as good a pun.
Yeah.
No. So most of the rest of the issue goes through Otto trying to figure out how to take a page out of the Dark Knight and monitor the entire city using... What's the kid's name?
Spider-Bots.
Uatu's facial recognition software.
Yeah, facial recognition software. Up until the point when Massacre does actually show up again, and Otto goes off, but he doesn't go straight there. And, well, Peter's, of course, just continuing to mouth off constantly, trying to figure out what the hell he's doing. Only Otto is going to save the people that Massacre has tied up first, because... He realizes, thinking like a supervillain, of course, he's gonna already have hostages there.
But and that's the thing. This is, again, it's like we're presented with this idea of the difference between Peter and it's like you're hoping that when Peter comes back, like he's gonna learn from this, because
at least a couple things.
These are the exact kind of things where it's like Peter would have just charge off to where the largest amount of danger is without thinking tactically.
And the thing is, Peter has all the ability to do all of this.
Sure.
He just never has.
Well, In some ways, he hasn't, because, again, it's like the monitoring software stuff is... Yeah.
It's like, again, I mentioned the Dark Knight. Yeah. It's the point that Lucius makes, like, no one man should have this much power.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I mean, so that's... Mm-hmm. I think there's
this
a line with that.
Slope, which we'll see towards the end of the issue. But
the way that he finds the hostages is certainly within Peter's capabilities.
Oh, definitely.
And... It's not something Peter would have thought of. He would have rushed in and then been caught flat-footed again because Massacre would have done the same thing.
On his feet and figure out how the hell do I get out of this mess this time.
Right.
You know, I think that, I think even now, still, over 2 years in, that Massacre story, that single issue even, the one with Massacre, where Spidey actually faces off against Massacre. It was a two-parter, started with the funeral issue, but is still probably the best story Slott has told in the course of his Spider-Man run. And the thing about that is, and we said it way back when, was that it epitomized the dedication and the stick-to-itiveness of Peter Parker. You throw something at him, he has got something to throw back at you. And even when, you know, he webs up the triggers, webs up thing, all the special kinds of web and everything, and he's ready for him. And then even at the very end, when he saves him from the police snipers, you're like, yes, yes, Peter, yes, you're brilliant, you are Spider-Man. You really cheer for the hero in that. It's great, you know.
But it does
exemplify how Peter is reactionary.
Yes.
And what we have here is when Otto is faced with Massacre, what we see is a proactive Otto. It's the core difference that's being exemplified in this story through a villain who previously was really used to exemplify the best traits of Peter Parker. We see Otto takes all of Massacre's trump cards out of play before Massacre even thinks to use them. I love this scene. What is the exact line of dialogue? You know, I have 5 hostages strapped to incendiary devices in a warehouse. No, you don't.
Yeah, click, nothing. Yeah.
So Peter goes to face off with him, and Massacre starts shooting everything up, including getting some people caught in a crossfire with Peter, of course, going like, what the hell are you doing?
I think we see another thing here, too, where, you know, we're talking about a difference in terms of, like, ethical approach, you know, between these two characters, where Otto is sort of taking a very... utilitarian approach.
Yeah.
He's willing to sacrifice a few people in order to stop larger amounts of killing, where Peter's sort of approaching it from a very moral absolutist, where it's like, every life has to be saved or I have failed.
Right.
Thus, the
whole no one dies kick.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing here, that Otto is willing to... allow for a few, you know, in order to save larger numbers of people. And you kind of get in that question, it's like, well, man, it's like, if Peter puts himself in so much danger that he can't save most people, or he dies, you know, to save one person, then what happens to everybody? You know, it's a very interesting argument, in a sense, that's
Peter
being made.
Is correct, you know?
Yeah. No, because you can't,
But it's like, Ock can live with the decisions he makes, and Peter makes the decisions that he makes because... It's like, Ock makes the decisions he makes because he knows he can live with the consequences of what he does, but Peter makes the decisions he makes because he knows he can't live with the other consequences.
Right. Correct. Yes. Yes,
so,
yes, yes.
He does finally get Massacre down, and gets his gun, and shoots him, and then holds the gun to his head.
Man.
And then asks everybody... what else should he do?
Oh.
And makes
Massacre. This line, was it like, so many ways I've taken lives over the years. Firearms seem beneath me somehow.
Yeah.
There's finality. This would solve everything.
And then...
But I mean, he's legitimately torn here. Like, he doesn't want to kill this guy. Ock's never been a murderer.
No. He's
seen this from the other side now, and he's seen what trying to actually fight for justice is like, and what it's some people do, and how he's given to like putting an end to things, you know.
The people tell him to shoot him, and bang.
Yeah.
But not before Massacre cries because he's afraid for his life.
Oh, which was like, oh, no. It's like Slott had to do that to you, too. It's like he had to, like, he had to turn this character around a little bit. I mean,
show the potential that there could be redemption for the guy there, and then he's
but
like,
"But not anymore."
That killer will always be inside.
Of course, the thing is, we don't see anything after the gunshot.
No.
Really, we see the press. You see Jameson praising him, and then we cut back to the CEO of the fast food chain.
Everybody's on his side. It's like, it's all looking pretty good. It's like, we as an audience are kind of shocked and horrified that Spider-Man has done this. But everyone's reaction, all the normal people's reaction, is like, you can't honestly disagree with them either. Because in the real world, if a cop takes out a guy with a gun in the middle of a train station, that cop is not really going to face much in the way of recrimination.
No, I mean, he's a hero.
So many people.
Yeah, I mean, they're, you know...
He just told Spider-Man to this higher moral standard.
Yes.
But I was
I imagine because the advertisement of someone on the upcoming issues, so do some other heroes.
Yes.
Yeah, well, and
although
that's...
There is a comment towards that I want to make towards something else that came out this week. But first, the very last page is Otto having hacked into the CEO's everything with all the spider bots swarming around her, say that she's going to have to answer for that.
Which is like, again, it's like, this is a lead that... This is totally an Otto thing. Like, Peter never would have even considered to even...
do not address people from big screens.
Well, it's not even that. It's like, Peter would have stopped at stopping Massacre. He would have been like, okay, I've stopped Massacre. You know, he would have had him arrested and done, and that would have been it. Like, he wouldn't have even thought to trace back, well, you know, he acts for a reason, he acts out of money... Who was, you know, what was the thought? What was, you know, and like gone into to even track this person down, you know, if he had the means, much less to even do anything about it. So, I mean, here again, it's like Otto is actually, you know, even though the methodology is questioning, he's even seeking like a deeper form of justice than I think Peter would. It's like Peter would have stopped. You know,
well, it's kind of that question of like, well, Batman or Spider-Man just always puts these people behind bars and they always get away.
Mm-hmm.
And then
if he'd gone far enough, he would have. You could see him. He would have hopped on their windowsill. You know, knocked on the window and just was like, "I'm watching you."
Yeah, yeah. I know what you did, and that wasn't very nice.
Yeah.
Can't do anything
like
about it. But
outside Thor's window, you know.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Otto's like, "I just killed this guy.
Yeah,
you paid him." What do you think is going to happen to you?
This is like, to me, this is a little bit of like the turn. Like, this is where, this is where we're getting close to like, Otto has started to go too far, and like, this is where we're going to start to.
And so
this is the
now,
U-turn point. You know?
Now, if he gets obviously kicked out of the Avengers, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Except for the fact that they do have people on the team that do kind of just Wolverine.
Over.
Yeah, Hawkeye.
Like Wolverine, the first issue of Wolverine this week, he just guts a guy, basically. And
yeah, but he's Wolverine.
But yeah, and nobody's probably going to make us think about that. But in this context, it makes sense.
Peter's supposed to be the nice guy.
Yes, yes.
He's just held to a different standard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
he's held to
yeah.
So, I mean, it's like it comes to the end of this, but he shoots Massacre, and like everyone is on his side, basically. And I'm like, you know, what you've done is an awful thing, but... In the end, that is one killer that is off the streets. I'm like, I know that I hold Spidey to a standard, but I don't disagree with what these normal people are saying. And then I'm like, that's going to leave me thinking at the end of the story. And then I turn the page and it's like supervillain address from big screen television. And it's like, oh Otto. Not black and white, are you?
You had to.
You're not that shades of gray, are you?
There's no shades of,
I'm just really interested to see how it's going to be handled in number 7 when they do have the Avengers show up. Because that's going to be interesting, I think. Especially I think the way that it's being done, might end up seeing things we don't entirely
expect. I'm interested.
I don't really know what they're going to exactly do.
I'm almost not as interested in their. I'm almost not as interested in their reaction as I am in Carly and Mary Jane's reaction to this.
They are the ones who know.
In particular, Carly.
It might not be that the Avengers kick him out for after all.
Yeah,
I mean, it could be something totally different. So.
They don't have a bunch of a peg to stand on if they do.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. Because like I said, again, they have Wolverine on the team.
They kill people all the time. You know? But there could be something. I mean, just like we saw in Avengers, you know, he's being kind of a prick to his teammates, too.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Spidey, stop eating cannonballs. You are fired, Spidey.
All right, Spidey, you keep eating people's lunches out of the fridge.
It's Tony's lunch then, so.
Yeah, that would be it.
Tony took it for as long as it was anybody else's lunch, but then Spidey had his lunch. That bitch was out of here.
That's it.
You know how much that caviar costs.
You ate my sandwich! My turkey and dressing sandwich!
Red Ross.
Friends? Yeah. Thank
I missed
you.
Out on that one.
Yeah! All right!
And briefly, also, Avenging Spider-Man number 18, I think, 17.
I'm liking...
Came out this week. Yeah. Just briefly, him teaming up with Thor against Electro. And they do some very interesting things with Electro in this issue, I think. Because I always like when a writer acknowledges the fact that Electro is probably one of the most single powerful villains that Spider-Man has. And he spends most of the issue kicking the shit out of Thor.
Yeah, he does. And I love anytime AIM gets involved, I always get a little giddy. I love AIM. I mean, they're
like,
like...
It's going to be fun.
They're just, yeah, they're the oddest group. To me, they're like the oddest villain group. Because it's like... Okay, they're super scientists, but they're not, like, super, super scientists. And they're all, like, really like, smart, but they're not that smart.
And Otto even notes in this issue, it's like, oh, they're brilliant. No, of course, I'm better. But
right, yeah, exactly. That's what I mean, because it's like, if any one of them were smarter, they would be, like, their own villain. Mm-hmm. So it's like a group of scientists that are just not quite smart enough or tactical enough to be like their own supervillain.
Sometimes, you know.
You know.
This issue also continues the thing where Otto is planning something, and you start to see roots of it.
Oh man, I'm like, well, like to me,
there's still a question from that first Avenging issue Yost did of the because every issue has a last page stinger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you
and don't know quite yet what that first one's going to lead to.
I think Yost is sort of building maybe to a little bit of maybe even post Otto. You know, because you can see, you know, Doc is, like, planning for the future a little bit. So, not that he's not going to be Spider-Man, but he's definitely doing something, you know? It's like...
Going forward here, what I have to say is that I really don't want Otto to die.
No.
I don't think... Like
ultimately, he's got to go somewhere once Peter comes back. And his body is dead. So... Got the jackal in there.
Yeah.
Get done with that. Should probably be in a prison somewhere.
And the funny thing is, that's such a simple solution too. That
yeah.
I can definitely see it happening.
Oh man, yeah, and get classic Otto back. Oh, I like it.
Probably clone him with a big gut and everything.
Oh yeah, you make him big fatty again.
Like you know, designer suit in his body.
Can you give me a six pack this time?
Yeah.
Wow. Which, you know, and again, it's like...
I was ripped in it.
So, excellent. Cool. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you really... I can't recommend more that, you know, you pick up Avenging. Like, if you're liking Superior Spider-Man, you really should be reading Avenging. But I'm saying, I realized that Avenging Spider-Man for a long time, you know, for most of the time that it was out, was really the throwaway book. You know, it was like one-off, hey, Spider-Man's going to be with so-and-so. Okay.
Yeah,
but
he's really made it into like, you know, Spider-Man used to have satellite titles and stuff would happen in them, and sometimes it would matter. And this seems to be more like that.
Yeah. These things are really starting to link up and connect, and you can see some, you know, interesting things going on, and so... Likes it a lot. Okay. Good deal. Nicole, then. Tell us about things.
Tell us. Okay. Well, I thought, well, it's St. Patrick's Day. We got to celebrate green, right? We got the Irish here. We got to wear the green. So I'm going to talk about what's the most green thing I could think of. Mars attacks. We got the
money.
Martians.
Oh. No.
Yay.
No,
the turtles didn't come out this week, or I probably would be talking to turtles.
It's like a missed opportunity.
I know. The thing is, before I even get started, if we were to do a best of show, this right now. This would be my favorite cover of the year. You got to see this cover. Now look at that.
I can't see it.
Oh.
Frozen.
It's Frozen. Basically, it's the story of these two.
It's the issue number, so people can look it up if it's not working on the...
I'm sorry. I apologize. Issue number 8, a cover A. They only have one cover in the retail center, so... It's awesome. It has the Martian...
Oh, dear.
I love it. It's, I think this was supposed to come out last month for Valentine's Day.
You would think.
It has the Martian Blix. I think that's how you say his name. Blix. But a bunch of these Martians do have names, and so you get to know them. And you have the gangster next to him, and he is Ray Delvaco. And it's kind of a fitting little cover because this one certain Martian, Blix, he's kind of seeing the goodness of humans. He sees, oh, look, they're having fun with families. They're having fun eating ice cream and just going out. He's starting to turn to, oh, there's a good part of humanity. And Ray here, he's trying to get away from, you thought he was the bad guy in the last issue, okay? But he's trying to get away from the people that are causing death and commotion from against these Martians. So they're kind of teaming up together, trying to do the buddy thing and be the heroes. Well,
would you go so far as to say that Blix was Ray's favorite Martian? That's a cover parody. Somebody do it. IDW, you can have that.
Man.
It's a punchline. Make use of it, somebody.
I don't think they have used that yet.
They're saving obviously for the end of year event.
That would be awesome. I mean, they had their big event at the beginning of the year with
Mars
Attacks. There's a crossover
for you. Mars Attacks.
They're going around and they're trying to, and they're starting to like each other.
I'll never find out what became of.
Oh, never know.
There's a lot of blood.
We lost you for just a second.
You jumped out, Nicole, and what we heard was they're starting to...
Blood. They're starting to blood.
That's a good transition.
Flipping the channels on the TV.
Well, they're starting to go, they're starting to go against the gangsters that were against Ray, and they're starting to go against the Martians that were doing harm against humanity. So there's a lot of blood, in the panel.
It's kind of like Thelma and Louise with a Martian.
It kind of is. It's a really good buddy comic. And even if you've never read any of the Mars Attacks, here's a good issue because they kind of explain in small detail what's going on, what's happened in the past with these two. But then the one guy, this is kind of going to be spoiler, but I need to tell you guys about it. The one guy you thought was the good guy from the previous 7 issues, who's making all these communication devices and all these other experiments to help the humans and the Martians come together. He's the bad guy. And basically he said, because of these two are so bonded together, there's a communication device that helps them understand each other. And so he decides to tweak this communication. The bad guy, I can't remember. He's got a Russian name.
It's always a Russian name, right? Isn't it?
Vladimir.
Yeah. Ivan. Ivan.
Igor.
Igor.
It's one of those four. Come on.
Alexei.
It's a comic, and he's Russian.
Yeah. But he decides to tweak the translation device into the opposite of what Ray's saying.
Do not run from us. They are your friends.
Yeah, exactly. So Ray's saying, he's communicating with these other Martians saying, Blix is a great guy. He's doing all this. And they're pretty much saying, no, you guys are going to die. And basically it just ends in tragedy at the end. And it's just really sad. You're like, I wanted to see these two keep on going together on these adventures and doing good for humanity and Martian kind.
No.
You're like,
This is Mars Attacks. It's got to be. There's got to be death and hijinks. I mean,
what? I'm not kidding. This is, again, IDW. This is another IDW wonderful comic. I just love every month. I look forward to it. And like I said, go look at the cover. It's just the cover alone.
That's amazing stuff.
IDW really lately in the past year or so, it's like they've really taken the ball of being the licensed company and ran with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well,
oh, like, yeah. Another, yeah.
Like the other one that I was thinking about recommending was the Ghostbusters, the new Ghostbusters skin. Awesome. Again, you're just like, I love these comics. IDW, you're amazing me.
It's good stuff.
So there you go. So,
cool. All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break, and then we will be right back.
You know, Robin, quite often people choke on a piece of food they're eating.
Right. What can you do for them?
Well, if I were choking, you'd stand behind me, wrap your arms around my waist, then make a fist with one of your hands and put it against my abdomen with your thumb against my body, slightly below my rib cage. Grab your fist and press in and upward. You might have to press and push up more than once. Try it again. It's important to get it right. Someone's life may depend on it.
All right, and we are back. So I will begin the second half with a small story, which is that I'm going to be talking about a couple of the Batman Requiem. For the first time this weekend, I actually went back and read A Death in the Family. I'd never read it before. And also, what is the crying, lying, dying, the Tim Drake introduction, whatever that weird title is.
I thought you were about to say The Crying Game for a second. I was like,
no, not The Crying Game. That's a different Batman title.
Oh my gosh.
That's a, what is that title?
Make it happen.
Chris, do you remember? Something about crying, lying, or dying. Those words are in there, and it's all with Tim Drake's introduction.
Try not to cry. Cry a lot.
Right. So anyway, so I read those two back-to-back because they're in the trade together with those. And I knew that that would be like kind of a setup for this because, again, it's like we have another, you know, Death of a Robin. And so the two that I read that I'll just mention briefly was Batman and Batman and Robin. So I'll start with Batman. Batman was actually like this oddly similar sort of mirror universe version of the Tim Drake introduction, really. I mean, it's basically that Tim Drake introduction smashed down and done in a different direction because we see, you know, again, it seems very, very likely that they are grooming, this, I always forget her name because it's so
Harper
Rowe. I love it. I just always forget it for some reason. but it does seem like they're sort of grooming her to become the next Robin. And she basically makes a similar argument as what happens in the Tim Drake introduction, which is that Batman's beating the crap out of everybody and losing his edge, and he's going to get himself killed unless he calms the fuck down. And, you know, Tim's answer was that he needs a Robin. Harper's answer is just, like, calm the fuck down. you know, and she's going to go out and help him.
I like that answer, though.
To do that. And even Bruce has this, like, great response in the middle of it. He's like, what, you think I'm going to take you back to my house and show you who I am and give you all my stuff? Because that's exactly what happened with Tim.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I don't fucking care who you are. I don't want to know who you are. You're a symbol
person
to me. No, she's like, you're a symbol to me and this city.
Yeah.
And I need you to be alive. You know, if you're not alive, then that all falls apart.
Not get yourself killed in your grief.
Yeah. So I don't know what's happened. I don't know why you're freaking out, but just calm the fuck down. And then there's like a postscript where she actually goes to Bruce Wayne to say, look, you got to help Batman because he's got to calm the fuck down.
Oh, well.
And so, awkward. You know, and Batman kind of comes around to meet up with her at the end, and he kind of apologizes for breaking her nose because he punches her in the face.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Wow.
And she basically lights up Wayne Tower. She has Mr. Wayne light up Wayne Tower with a word, which is resolve, but of course all you can see is the R in the windows. Yeah.
Nice try.
Yeah, but he buys it. I mean, he definitely, like, he gets it, you know, and he seems to, like, really connect with her in the sense that, you know, that that he appreciates obviously what she's done, and he's going to calm the fuck down. Right. So it ends up being a really interesting issue. It's again where it's like we get this, we get a Harper focus like after an event, because I think the last time we had a Harper focus was after, was that Court after Court of Owls?
I think that's what it was.
So it seems interesting. It's well timed. I mean, it's time to see Harper again, I guess. But it had a few moments, especially because it rang so much to that Tim Drake introduction, that sort of got me. But it wasn't like really heart-wrenching. It was more like, again, that word resolve, I think, really spoke well for the theme of the entire book, which was that, you know, it's like, okay, we will carry on from this, you know, as well. However, the book that will rip your heart out and kill you and you will cry forever is
I don't need to cry anymore this week.
Oh my God. Well, I even got choked up reading A Death in the Family. I was surprised. I was like, man, it wasn't for Jason Todd because he's a tool, but more was for Batman, because it was just like, you know.
Well, it's like with A Death in the Family, you already know Jason gets beaten to death with a crowbar, gets blown up. You know, that's everybody knows that, but nobody really talks much about the other stuff that's in the story.
Yeah, and it really is like some of the stuff, even with Jason's moms and stuff, there was a little bit there. But man, boy, Jason came from bad pedigree too. It was just like,
no shit.
Harper actually has, I think, this interesting combination of elements of Tim and Jason in that way, where like she's got like the tech stuff and, you know, kind of like the smarts like Tim, but she's really got that rough background like Jason, you know, did. So it's going to be interesting. And of course, the people that are like, there's already Robins, what is it? Yeah, whatever. Harper's cool. Just stick with Harper.
Well,
okay?
I mean, at this point, if you're considering, because I don't really know what they're keeping from what Tim's done and what he hasn't done at this point. But before the New 52, Tim had become his own hero. He'd had his own book for over 150 issues or so, I think.
Yeah.
He was his own. So him becoming Red Robin, that worked because he was his own man at that point. Okay. And so it doesn't, I wouldn't want, this, even though he's only stuck in Teen Titans right now, I wouldn't really want to have them just slot him back in as Batman's sidekick.
Yeah.
Just as a fan of Tim.
I can't, you know, I'm looking at this. There's a, I can't tell what they've done here. Okay. So going on to Batman and Robin, first of all, this issue, it's not a completely silent issue because there is a letter at the end of the book. So there is text, but there is no dialogue in this issue.
Wow.
And there's a painting that's unfinished, and Damien's like the unfinished element in the painting.
Ouch.
Oh, I know. But it's Alfred and Bruce and Dick and somebody else and Damien. I don't know if they cut. I can't tell if that's supposed to be Jason.
Or Tim.
Or Tim.
Probably Tim.
I'm assuming it's Tim.
Because
Jason really hasn't been.
In the New 52, have they kept where Bruce adopted Tim or not?
Yes.
That's a good question.
I thought they did. Because he is Tim Wayne.
He is Tim Wayne? Okay.
Is he Tim Wayne? I don't know. As early as the first Batman arc, they were still calling him a former Robin.
Well, that's all screwed up.
I don't know if Snyder is copping a Morrison.
Yeah, well, I mean, the adoption didn't come until, like, after Infinite Crisis, I think.
I think he's supposed to still be adopted. I don't know. I was trying to read the wiki on it, and it was all confusing. Because there is a lot of unresolved issues coming out of the 52.
I would imagine it would have to be Tim, because that would be
I think it's got to be Tim, because if it's...
Jason and I can understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jason's kind of an asshole.
But you can see, like, it's in progress, like, there's paint and, you know, stuff around, and... The first thing that really, like, was, like, the first bit of tears welled up is Bruce... You can see that Bruce has decided to go out on patrol. And so they do the clock thing, and the bookshelf opens up, and there's the two poles that go down.
Jesus Christ.
And it's like, oh! You know, and it's just like, and the whole book is kind of like that. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of things that are happening in Bruce's mind and stuff, and just, you know, and a lot of this, again, post-rage. I mean, you get this thing where, like there's one deal in here where it's like you see him going around and beating up, well, everybody. And then he just, like, lays them all out on the top of GCPD. So it's just like the bat signal and a pile of unconscious bodies just strewn about, you know? So, but I won't say, I'm not going to give the anyway. I don't really want to talk much more about it, but the letter is killer. The letter is like where like the spring well opens up and you're done, you know, you're like misting through the last bit, and even looking at it, I can't even. So, anyway.
Altogether, I've really not been sure what to make out of these Requiem books, because it feels like DC is really jumping the gun here, because we haven't even had the next day. Because let us not forget, Damian dies on the very last page of Batman Incorporated number 8. So we haven't even had the writer who wrote the character's death actually do any fallout from the character's death yet.
And there's still, and you would think there'd still be fallout from Death of the Family too to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, we've really gone straight onto this, and never mind all the other stuff. And it's like we have to pretend that that's the only thing happening in Batman Incorporated instead of all the other stuff that's going on there as well. Nobody is talking about.
And it's like
many books. Well, Batman and Batman
and Robin. It does feel like it's a little too. They did this a little too soon, just after Death of the Family, almost.
I think it's just the way it worked out, though, because
what he was doing.
I understand that. It just feels like went from right one thing to the other.
This is going to sound extremely optimistic, in particular concerning the conversation we just had about Tim. But you know, my hope is that they actually got with Morrison and like, okay, is this for real? Is he really dead? You know, this is going to be a thing.
I'm sure that there's been corroboration. It's just that, you know, to have all these books instead of the book where he dies deal with his death first.
Well, but those books are spaced out and stuff too. I mean, it's like it's gonna.
They have the Nightwing. There's a Nightwing issue for this, right?
Yeah,
also?
Everybody's gone.
Even World's Finest touched on it.
Because Nightwing is the one I really want to see what they do with.
Did it come out this week?
Did it come out?
I don't know.
I missed it when I was.
Batgirl came out this week, and it was like.
Yeah, I got the Batgirl one.
Yeah, it was like in the midst of. It's the same with World's Finest, and the same with Detective Comics. In the midst of their ongoing story, they take a page to get on the phone and go, "Here, Damian's dead. Jesus, I'm away."
Oh.
Yeah, World's Finest was like, yeah, she was in the middle of a thing. Yeah, by the way, Damian's dead. You know, and she goes. She actually goes to the graveyard.
She almost runs into
Batman.
Aside 10 minutes to mourn by his graveside, but Gordon's not going to punch himself in the face. Off we go.
So I mean, it's a little sad too, because at least with in you know, her case, you know, they were actually alternate dimension biological siblings. You know, at least half siblings. Right. So it's like, you know,
I like did with that with World's Finest. I like
that
was good.
World's Finest is like, it's so, there's bits that I really love, and then there's bits that it's like, what is going on? Why can't you do better? Like, do more like these other bits that are good. Can we get rid of Power Girl out of this book? That would make this fine. Like, the Huntress stuff out of World's Finest has been great. The Power Girl stuff is like, you're just an awful person, and I can't get behind you at all. I mean, really, like, Power Girl, they have just made her the female version of a misogynist in a way, and she's just an arrogant prick. She's awful.
Wow, that's impressive.
I mean, she really is. It's like, you know, she's materialistic and vain, and she's not even very heroic. you know, like, Holt Industries invades one of her laboratories, so she, like, goes and attacks all of Holt's laboratories and, like, you know, causes an earthquake and almost kills people. It's like, this is not a hero. What have you done to this character? You know, and meanwhile, Huntress is, you know, doing pretty cool stuff. But, I don't know. We just need to get Huntress her own book and just, I don't know. Power Girl needs, I don't know, that, for being trained by a Boy Scout, it's like, mm-hmm. she's not very, you know, I don't know. Anyway, so, moving on. But that, I mean, yeah, I agree with what you're saying in terms of, maybe they've jumped the gun, but I think in the sense it's kind of like, at least for Batman and Robin, for Batman, they were both at places at which they needed to deal with it. I mean, Batman and Robin didn't really have a choice because there isn't a Robin.
Clearly.
So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So that book didn't have a choice.
Well, it's just like you said a couple weeks ago, you know, most people didn't know this was going to be happening until
nobody
the
knew.
Week the comic came out.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, really nobody knew. And then Batman, it's just convenient because it's after Death of the Family. And really, it's more of a Harper Row story.
It is.
Which they've kind of did that before anyway, so there's kind of an established, you know, thing there anyway.
These are not a pair of good comics either.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. But I agree in the sense of, like, the timing, but...
You see what happens next issue, Batman Inc. if Morrison's just gone, everyone else is dealing with it, I'll just move on here.
Yeah. No, he really, but it would be.
That's okay.
It would be really awful if he pulled like something and like, no, he's really alive. We'll go get the potty parts.
I can't imagine that happening.
It would be. That would just be terrible.
Yeah, we just threw him in a Lazarus pit. It's fine.
No. They've got all his body parts in the thing. They just go fill his guts back in and good to go. You know.
Technically,
they've done it before. You know. So I don't know. I hope they don't.
Morrison's Batman has taught me that's a thing.
Yep. So, anyway, so there you go. Chris McFeely?
Yeah, okay. I got a couple of quick hits. Fantastic Four number 5 was out this week. Did you ever wonder what it would be like if Julius Caesar was actually a time-traveling alien? Find out this week!
My gosh, finally! I've been.
I thought Hickman wasn't doing year. Fantastic Four anymore.
I know, right?
Like, where does...
this is an issue of two halves in which Reed and Sue have the talk after Sue finds out that Reed is keeping something from them, and Ben, Johnny, and the kids go down to find out. This it's a really great start to the story where Valeria and Franklin are putting on a little play about the life of Julius Caesar for the family, you know, and they're talking about a time Julius Caesar was kidnapped by pirates, and the ransom for him was paid and he was let free, he vowed to come back for them, and he did, and he crucified them, but legend claims that he slit the pirates' throats first so that as an act of mercy, because he'd come to quite like them in the time whenever he'd stayed with them. And in the course of the thing, it's like the Fantastic Four lined up watching, Reed and Sue are just sort of, Reed's staring at Sue, Sue's avoiding his glances, and Ben and Johnny are just totally enraptured by the play.
You know, because that's about right.
And then Valeria is like, darn if he didn't deliver them 50 silver talons just as he said he would. And so we freed the scurvy dog who promised us he would be back. You know, and then it's like, first he slit their bloody throats as an act of mercy because he kind of liked the pirates. The end. And the thing just goes, yowza! And the human torch goes, did that really happen? So they go back in time to ancient Rome to find out if that really happened.
Oh my god.
And what do you know? Turns out Julius Caesar was a time-traveling alien.
Oh, well. Okay.
He's the doctor?
Well, no. Julius Caesar was a real guy, and a time-traveling alien actually possessed his body and animated him long after his actual death to ensure that the death history claimed he had could come to pass.
Wow.
I know, right? I know.
That is...
Wow.
I didn't expect this stuff out of Fraction, honestly.
No, Fraction
no.
is doing
that's,
wacky stuff.
That's what, exactly why I said. It's like, did Hickman... I thought he was not doing... You know.
I know.
Another book that's really annoying me is Avengers Arena. And it's really annoying me because it's
It's annoying me with how good it is.
Oh, damn it. I was afraid you were going to say that.
No, yeah, it's kind of getting on my wick. I mean, it's not groundbreaking or anything, but first of all, this is issue 6, okay? Nobody has died since issue 2. First of all, it's not about killing somebody every issue. We had Metal died in the first issue. I'm still pissed. Metal is dead. And then we had Red Raven die at the very start of the second issue. Nobody ever gave a fuck about Red Raven. And she killed herself anyway, colliding off a force field, trying to fly away. Nobody cares. It doesn't matter. Nobody has died since then. This issue features the first death perpetrated by one of the kids killing another one of the kids for the purposes of the story. It is game on with this issue. But I probably shouldn't have said that, because what I'm going to say, I'm not going to tell you who it is, but anybody who's reading the book and hasn't read this issue, last issue gave us a spotlight on one of the new characters from the Braddock Academy, and made me hate him so much that I was going to actively look forward to his death. Motherfucker's head clean off his shoulders. And I'm like, hooray! And it's kind of annoying me in that regard, you know? That's about all I have to say. It's like, the Braddock Academy kids are quite interesting, to be fair. You've got, there's Kid Britain, who's the head of them all, powers based on confidence, young teenage alternate reality version of Captain Britain. There is, and he's been notionally boyfriend of this other character, Apex, but he's really, who seems quite nice up until now, but who has secretly been banging this Atlantean girl, Nara, on the side. All three of them, total dicks. Seriously. Massive. You wouldn't even believe. I will actively look forward to each of their deaths. Except, at the end of last day, Nara gets blasted off a cliff by Deathlok. Deathlokette. And Apex says to leave her, because she's an Atlantean, she'll survive the crash into the river below, and she's not sharing Kid Britain anymore. and in the course of this issue, Nara, with the other two characters, Colin Bloodstone, who is like, we know Elsa Bloodstone from Legion of Monsters most recently, also a member of Next Wave, you know, the British monster hunter chick. And he's a relative of hers. Anachronism is this other character. Aiden's his real name. He is a young, fat, ginger gamer nerd whose body is possessed by the powers of an ancient Celtic warlord. So he's big, okay. Battle axe type kind of guy.
Oh, wow.
This is the funny thing. I could have sworn up until now that Aiden and Cullen were gay with each other, but it turns out they're not.
Oh.
I think I turned into Tumblr.
Wow.
I mean, I just honestly assumed, based on the way they were talking to one another, that they were gay. But yeah. I think, so now in the course of this, we have Aiden being interested in Nara. And so now I'm thinking maybe it's just Cullen that's gay and he's interested in Aiden, but Aiden is not gay. So I don't know what way it's going to go. So that's got me. I'm liking that. But I really was turned around on Nara as well, because in the last issue, I thought she was just being an arrogant bitch. But in the course of this, I realized she's really just being an Atlantean. Atlantean.
Yeah.
In Marvel, and she's just quite matter of fact and straightforward in her. She doesn't say what she's not thinking. You know, she just that's what she's thinking, and she's not trying to hide anything from anybody. And it does make her come off as very standoffish and a bit holier than thou. But I'm okay with her living, and these other two bitches to die. It's got me rooting for people's deaths now. It's honestly a book that I as soon as they kill one of the runaways, I will lose my shit. So we'll just where it goes, you know.
I'm not looking forward to.
Yeah.
I mean, as of right now. Sorry?
What comic is this?
This is Avengers Arena.
What comic is this?
Avengers Arena.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, as of right now, they keep a little checklist in the front. We have lost Red Raven and Metal, and we've lost another character as of this issue, not telling you who it is. Darkhawk is a question mark, because his amulet was removed from him, and it is now held by Chase from the Runaways. I don't know what's going to happen there. I'm also very worried for Justin. Justin and his Sentinel, you'll remember from Avengers Academy. Yes, he is missing. His Sentinel was attacked, and he is missing currently. But we know that a cover from a few issues down the line has shown Nico from Runaways fighting the Sentinel, so I know I still get a few more months of them anyway, so it's all good.
Oh, okay. God.
Wow.
This makes me, like, I'm not reading it just because it, like, I want to just ignore it and hope for the best, almost.
Yeah.
But it is a book that annoys me because it's quite well written and it's got good art, and I'm like,
I don't want to hear that.
To live, that I know we're gonna die, and you've created me. And I was like, I figured, oh, I hate this person. They are probably going to live forever.
Yeah, they're gonna make it all the way.
And then it is like, lop, and I'm like, I won't miss you. You're getting me on your side, book. Yeah, so this might be one, I think, for people who are on the fence about it to check out in the first trade, because I would presume the first trade will go up to this issue, maybe. It's kind of a cliffhangery ending, but I don't think the next issue follows on directly from this, because I think the next issue is an arcade issue to really show us how things came to this. So it might go up to this point. You might be surprised by Avengers Arena. I'm not saying I'm not still pissed off that Metal is dead or anything, because I am.
Right, yeah, I mean, you know.
Give up on the book or didn't try it out because you were worried about that, you might be surprised.
I might check it out. Next time I go back.
Yeah, so I talked about that a little longer than I planned to, so I'm just going to talk briefly about Avengers number 7 as well. This is from last week.
Yes.
Okay, because you have to explain if any of this stuff makes any sense at the beginning of this book, because I don't know what the hell.
I have to be honest, it actually doesn't make any sense to me, but I am given to understand that the imagery we see here of some kind of alien station in the space between realities is from Warren Ellis's New Universal, which was a series from a couple of years back, which never finished because Warren Ellis, which was about a modern reworking of the New Universe characters and setting and everything. So Hickman's pulling from both the original New Universe and Ellis's reimagining.
Wow.
In particular, this scene of when we actually... I mean, the issue begins, aside from seeing this strange blue... I don't know if this is supposed to be the structure is collapsing. All these aliens keep saying, "We know the machine is broken." This is what we have been told by Captain Universe and Nightmask. That something is wrong. Something forces beyond creation are causing a breakdown of the natural order of things that are going to lead to something. And we did talk about Avengers number 6, didn't we? Because we were talking about it was by spitting cannonballs of food.
No.
Yeah, so, I mean, New Universe was a Marvel imprint in the 80s, headed up by Jim Shooter, which was supposed to be about how the real world, no hidden races of gods or mutants or anything, just totally the real world into which superhumanity suddenly came to be as a result of an event called the White Event. And suddenly there were these super beings were born into it. Now, Hickman has repurposed the idea of that as an event which creates heralds and heroes to guard the world in question against some encroaching threat. So that's what we've got happening here. And at the very start of this issue, the White Event occurs. And this repeated refrain of the White Event, the White Event, the White Event, the White Event, that's from Ellis's New Universal as well. What surprised me, though, was that this panel of Hawkeye and Thor shielding their faces from the light is from the first issue of Avengers, because we remember how the first issue of Avengers began with that list of events that happened prior.
Yeah. Right.
Happened after. Now, I figured, it does mean we misread and lost some of the poetry of that opening, where the nature of it, like the first event in the future from where that issue began that we saw was the White Event, or the Light, as it was called at the time. It happened before the light. And then I don't remember what the other two were, but it happened before something else, and it happened before something else. And a logical reading of that to me was that the light was the furthest thing away, and then each of the two things after that were closer, you know, like it was counting backwards from the light. It happened before this, but it also happened before this and before this. You know, just like...
Right, yeah.
But it turns out that in this issue that the light is actually the first thing that that is happening in that. So we've still got these two big events that we're counting towards. So with that explanation out of the way, the actual structure of this issue sees us jumping back and forth between the Avengers and a university campus somewhere, where we see various people. We see a little couple, talking about getting married. We see someone with a nifty TARDIS phone cover, talking about his important work in the lab. We see a really smart guy, standing up and just talking in class.
How do you know he's smart? Does he wear glasses?
No, he's doing big words.
Yeah.
Big words.
And we see a kind of like a jock guy bragging about knocking somebody out. And over the course of the issue, like, the first thing I think is, oh, okay, so these are the characters. First of all, I think, what's the significance of these characters?
Yeah. Right.
Whenever Night Mask and Captain Universe are in the other cuts are explaining all this to the Avengers, they say, there are others. They're supposed to be a Justice, a Cypher, a Starbrand, a Spitfire, and these are all new universe titles. Justice Inc., Starbrand, BT7, Spitfire, the Spitfires. These were all real. So I think, oh, okay, so these characters are the ones who are going to become all the new universe characters. And then we find out that this university is just where the Starbrand is going to come from. So then you think, oh, okay, so it's going to be one of these guys. Oh, which one is it going to be? And then his comic just comes, slap you down at the end.
Yeah, and just like you thought, what?
Yeah.
You was wrong.
it is a masterclass of misdirection.
Like I was talking about in the pre-show, I completely overlooked. Utterly.
I overlooked it.
What it is, I overlooked it.
As you should have.
Right there. It is, you have nobody's fault, but it's nobody's fault but your own for not seeing it. It is right there. It's actually like there's direct interaction more than once. It's right there in the foreground, in the middle ground, in the background. But you're always looking somewhere else, and it's even going to play into that.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh, Hickman, you wicked bitch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
See, this is the kind of thing.
This is what I'm here for.
Yeah, this is what I was hoping for.
And
also,
it's not a self-contained issue or anything. It very much follows on from where it's going, and it does totally end on a cliffhanger. But it's also kind of a self-contained issue. It's kind of hard to describe. It is like an experiment in misdirection in the span of 20 pages.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
But it's part of something else as well. It is, and I mean, I've seen very divisive opinions of this. Most actual critical reviewers seem to be praising it very highly, but then there's a lot of people who just don't seem to get it.
Really?
Like,
how can you not? This is brilliant.
It spells it out at the end of the issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's right there. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it doesn't even get to the end and go, you know, well, here it is, and you're dumb if you didn't see it. It actually goes here, 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 and here. You get it?
Yeah.
You know.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's I don't know if experimental is the right word, because it's just right there. You know, it's just really, really crafty, misdirective storytelling that... It's just why?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One note also on the art. Iron Man is putting his suit on. That was
pretty sweet.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You know, I just figured out this. I just figured out this nerdy guy is Bruce Banner.
Yeah, I know. It's like I keep doing that. I keep going, who is that dude? And then I'm like, oh yeah, that's right.
So he is smart.
Yeah.
No, not that nerdy guy.
I kept going. Who is this guy with glasses, like with this weird thing? And then, like, I turned the page, and I'm like, where did Hulk come from? And why does he have that guy's arm? Oh!
It's like, I'm not...
seeing Bruce Banner in an Avengers scenario. Yeah. You can see the Hulk, but it's the fact that Bruce and the Hulk just have this thing going on right now.
Yeah. And I'm, like, totally not reading that, so it just took me a second. I was like, why
yeah,
is it?
I was like, I know I should probably should be checking it out, but I was like, oh, yeah. I keep forgetting.
It's one of those things we really all should as well. It's like, it's not quite as good as Daredevil, but it's still really, honestly, another one of the top Marvel now books that I'm going to have to treat it again.
Yeah, I'm going to treat it.
That's right. Didn't get a chance to remind everybody on Fanboy Versus last week, but Hawkeye.
That was convenient for me because I started issue 6 and that went up to 5.
What's also great is that I didn't realize what the trade was doing, but it also contains Young Avengers Presents number 6, which I do own, but which I realized I have absolutely zero recollection of, which was also and was the story of the first meeting between Kate and Clint.
Oh, cool.
Oh, okay.
That's cool.
Nice. Yeah, so that's out. First 5 issues and that 6 issues, $16.99. Jesus Christ, get it?
Buy it.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, man. Hawkeye is so good.
Hawkeye.
I think, like, this week there's, like, 3 reprintings of 3 different issues. Like,
Hawkeye. There's a lot of reprints of early Hawkeye coming out this week.
Like MASH.
Which is good.
Yeah. Luggy, luggy, MASH, you know, hey.
Hawkeye.
Number 1. Number 2. Talking about
did a trade.
Yeah, Hawkeye. So Avengers is great. So is Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All that's right.
Yeah, ongoing thing, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
Hawkeye.
No, yeah. It will never get old. All right. Let's talk about this awful thing so we can get out of here.
Oh God.
Well, according to McFeely, he's got maybe a little hope for us.
Say that.
I mean, come on. It's like, I open this book up, and it's like, okay, we've just replaced Apocalypse with Ultron, and it's like, this is not creative at all.
Start with a shiny cover.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I went in my shop. I went in my shop, and it was sitting on the wall. And I literally turned to my shopkeep and went, really? Really?
Look how it dances and excites.
He's a big Ultron fan, so he was like, he loved it. But I'm just like,
shiny cover every now and again.
Really?
I hold this not against it in any way. Ultron is a shiny metal robot. It's okay. Yeah.
Okay. It's very so very
you
very.
Know, I thought the cover
it reminds me of my childhood in ways that.
Cover is it?
Yeah.
That's a good cover.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's the best part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's just run over this quickly.
You hit this up,
New
Chris.
York City, today. Well, apparently Ultron's taken over the world.
Oh, well.
Hey.
And then in a very brief summation, Hawkeye rescues Spider-Man, the captive Spider-Man from Hammerhead and the Isle.
Of course, it seems to be Peter, I think.
Let's just Jesus.
Okay, sorry.
God, can we not?
Hawkeye rescues the captive Spider-Man from Hammerhead in the Isle. Ultron's robots show up. There's a lot of vibrating. Hawkeye escapes and takes him back to the other surviving Avengers who are holed up in the helicarrier. They're a little brusque about it because they told Hawkeye if he was going to go, he shouldn't come back. But it all settles down. And Captain America is sad.
The end.
That was the first issue.
Yeah.
And no, by helicarrier, we mean...
Before we go on, I do have the second issue. I'm assuming you guys don't.
No.
No,
I didn't.
That first issue was like...
The first issue was like, nah.
No, the second issue is better than the first.
Well...
It is still not great, but it is better than the first. It is predominantly about Black Widow, who has been rather nastily scarred up in the events of the things. And she has teamed up with Moon Knight, of all people, which is pretty cool. And they are just sort of trying to survive. They have found one of Nick Fury's old safe houses, and they're rather intent on taking Ultron down. Spidey recounts for the Avengers how he remembers like Ultron's sudden attack and takeover, which does seem to have involved like lowering some kind of mechanical doom device over the city. And Spidey talks about, we gotta do this thing, and then Captain America is not sad anymore.
Oh God, yeah. Right. Well, so that makes me want to buy it.
So, to sum up, issues 1 and 2 of Age of Ultron are what issue 1 should have been. Let me get that out of the way and said first.
So, yeah. Basically, the Age of Ultron is Steve Rogers' therapy sessions.
Well, he's okay now, so no more.
Oh, okay.
He's sad, and now he's come up with a plan and is not sad anymore.
Oh, good.
Okay. Glad we get almost that.
Definitely. Yeah. I need to make like that sad panda 40 pages Steve Rogers that like that needs to be like a background or something.
Sad
this
panda?
Is decompressed sad. In extremis.
And well, Bendis.
A large part of that is it's not entirely Bendis because now let us make no mistake here. Gorgeous art. Gorgeous
art. Oh, yes.
Right? You art never great. Get anything short of excellent art from Brian Hitch. But it does result in huge amounts of gigantic widescreen splash pages and panels in which nothing is happening.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what's happening on this page, Brian? Nothing.
There's a city and nothing is going on in it, you know.
Yeah. Just draw me a big two-page spread of a big city with nothing happening.
You know, like I picked up issue 2 and I'm like, I swear to Christ, there better be some dialogue on the first page of the fuck! Okay, all right, it's a double page spread. That's the first. Okay, I'll give it the page 3 and 4. Fuck! And so we're talking page 5.
Oh my God.
That pisses me off whenever it's not about silently establishing a mood or anything. It's just about filleting your artist. That annoys me.
Yeah, as opposed to like the Batman and Robin issue. JD was
Yeah, I mean that's meant to be that, you know. That's a choice. This is not
it's
a choice.
The Spider-Man's recounting of when he remembers the takeover is also done in silence, and that's about facilitating a story. It's about a silent, horrific recollection of an event. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is just very much one of those things where it's not like it's an actively bad story. No. But there's nothing. The first 2 issues are what should have happened in the first issue.
We say that about Bendis all the time.
That sad cap, and just started with just here we go.
So, how many books are there? Books of Ultron.
It is a 10-issue series.
Oh my God!
Oh lordy, lordy, lordy!
The fact is that it's coming out on a very accelerated schedule.
Because they waited until
issue
until 2
is issue 2 is out 1 week after issue 1.
I mean, this and is so late.
Going to be out again before the end of this month.
Yeah.
And then 2 more issues next month, and then there's 2 issues and 2 issues.
This is so late. This is so far behind.
You know, I always try with anything to remove myself when it comes to a project from any knowledge I have about the nature of its coming into being. It's like when I watched the Amazing Spider-Man film, I had to separate myself from the knowledge that this film only exists so that Sony could keep the rights to Spider-Man, for instance. Some reviewers were not able to do that and were hitting on it purely for existing. Yeah, whatever. Age of Ultron is friggin' killing me for this. Because I am proving completely incapable of separating from this comic the fact that I know. Because it says right here, first double print spread, first issue, New York City, today. And obviously the idea of that is supposed to be the impact. It's supposed to go, oh my God, it's today. Ultron has taken over suddenly, quickly, horrifyingly. Everything has gone to crap. This is not the future. This is now. And all I'm thinking is, it's not today. It's 3 years ago when this was written. Mm-hmm. Do not tell me that Iron Man has not been recolored from red to black. Do not tell me a different artist did not draw Captain Marvel's costume details on top of Miss Marvel. Captain America is just wearing his scale mail, not his Marvel Now design. Thor's correct. Got his sleeves. And that is clearly, as much as you're going to try and fucking claim it in your merchandising, and I'm sure in the one-shot that's coming out, that is Peter Parker. That is
yes.
not...
Yes.
Yeah. That was the first thing that said, I was like, wait, wait,
that's,
wait.
That's, I think that's crap. One thing that... Yeah, that definitely threw me off, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is what is really pulling me out of this. And it's like, now in the second issue here, there is a rather cool double page spread of one of Fury's notice boards. You remember how back during things like Secret Invasion, Fury would have these notice boards with all these pictures and things pinned up. Mm-hmm. And it is a big, particularly during Secret Invasion, he's trying to figure out who was a Skrull and who wasn't. He's got a big board of Polaroids of many, many Marvel characters here. And we saw the pencil art for this a while back. And some things have changed. Now, one of them obviously was Rom was there, which cannot be. So that has changed to another Space Knight called Icon. But like Spider-Man's Polaroid used to say Parker, and it now says Spider-Man. And Patriot of the Young Avengers is gone, and Miss America has appeared in his place. You know, and yet you know there's still a Polaroid for Miss Marvel, and there's still a Polaroid there for Octavius when he did. It is pulling me out of the story to realize that the chronically never mind the actual content of the story, it's the fact that this was able to be lifted from 2 or 3 years ago when it was originally like foreshadowed and written to be and just dropped in here with changes amounting to that. It just highlights like it sucks any sense of it mattering. This thing explosively decompresses any sense of mattering.
Oh, yeah.
Completely out of the for me.
I was so excited for this, too.
Because Ultron is awesome.
Yeah.
He's an evil robot.
It's not in the bloody comic.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I'm thinking Ultron, I'm thinking like some of my favorite Avenger stories ever. And
yeah. Ultron is the greatest Avengers villain.
Yeah,
because, I mean, like, dedicated Avengers villain. It's like the Avengers have lots of baddies, but most of those baddies are villains of their individual members, like Loki. Yeah. But Ultron and Kang are basically your two dedicated Avengers villains, and Ultron is better than Kang.
Yeah.
But it's not about Ultron being the villain, it's about the threat of Ultron being a villain.
Yeah.
He's there, we're told, and there are all these duplicate bodies of his hanging around, but I think I've even heard that we may not find out how he took over.
Oh,
God.
It's irrelevant.
Are you serious?
Because
this didn't even happen. I mean, they're not even going to... This is going to unhappen, I mean, by the
it
end.
It has to. There is no way. Like, that's the thing. It's like, you can put that today on there as much as you like in an attempt to shock me. And it might work if this was 5 years ago and the marketplace was in a position where you could do a bunch of minis and tie-ins and other comics to really create the idea that this was happening in the Marvel Universe. But A, it's not today, it's 3 years ago, you're only doing it now because there's a gap in the schedule and you can, and no one else is playing ball, and you can't do it in other comics anyway.
It seems like it would have been...
It really stands out that like the initials for end up being AU.
Yeah.
I mean, they should have...
It's like all the tie-ins as well. It's like the nature of the story is one that requires a different marketplace to sell it to its fullest. It requires an Age of Apocalypse. I mean, it is the Age of Apocalypse. And they call it the Age of Ultron. Obviously, it's the Age of Apocalypse. But what happened when the Age of Apocalypse was published was that the regular X-Men comics didn't come out, and these miniseries set in the parallel universe came out in their place. To sell this concept as something that is happening today, that is what is needed. But that is not where the marketplace is. And even just a few years ago, we could have at least had Age of Ultron, : Spider-Man, Age of Ultron, : Avengers, 3-issue miniseries. Mm-hmm. And even maybe a couple of books who weren't in the middle of anything major could have had tie-ins in themselves. But because Fear itself absolutely tore the living arse cheeks out of the mouth.
Jesus.
Tie-ins. Now all they can manage is these one-shots, and we don't even get Superior Spider-Man : Ultron one-shot. We have to they have to essentially try to trick readers into picking them up by doing, I mean, I don't know if we've really talked about this on the show, but this is how the tie-ins are working. It's series title, number, the issue of the comic that is out that month, AU.
Yeah.
Right.
I see that going in my box, sorry, dude.
Yeah, no.
To be fair, they are exceptionally minimal. There are only 2 out this month, and there are only 3 out in every other month. For an event, the total number of books from Age of Ultron, including the series itself, is less than 20.
Okay.
you know, there is very little actually out and happening with this, because this is the state of the marketplace for tie-ins. But the fact that they, I mean, it's like, I'm going to get the Fantastic Four one, because it's written by Fraction and drawn by Bagley. So, that may have been the issue of that. But Avengers Assemble, I don't even remember who's writing it. It's not Kelly Sudokonic. I don't care. I'm not getting it. You know,
and Slott's not writing Superior, so...
Yeah. But Christos Gage is, so I am. Christos Gage is writing the Superior Spider-Man one, so I am going to get that.
You were saying it's, what, only 20 issues?
I think it might only be 19.
I just regret buying the first one. I'm not
gonna... Well, I mean, and that's, I think that'll be for a lot of, you know, for a lot of people in the market, you know.
I'm not saying this might not go somewhere interesting, but it has really limped out of the gate very bad.
It seems like it would have been better served to be, like, in the near future or tomorrow. You know, it's like, take the today out and put tomorrow, and then I might be in. Because, you know...
I have a disproportionate amount of dislike for that today. It's just one word.
Yeah.
But it is really at the heart of what is pulling me out of the story.
Yeah,
that one word creates a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think you hit the nail on the head when you're like, that's Spider-Man's Peter Parker, and I think that's what's
true. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you can look at that costume.
There's like a first moment in there, you're like, wait.
The costume isn't even superior.
No.
Yeah.
Well, in fairness, neither is the one in Avengers, but...
That's true. Yeah.
Well, no. You can. The eyes are. I mean, you can always. You can tell by the eyes on that.
It doesn't have claws, but.
Yeah. But I mean, the superior issue that claim it's Otto.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, and to be like, it's like I look at what else they've got advertised here, and yes, I am going to get Ultron number one AU in April, because that's being written by Catherine Immonen and it stars Victor Mancha from The Runaways. Yes, okay. I will get that. You'll be down for that, you know. But not a single one out of May's do I want. Avengers Assemble, Uncanny Avengers, and Fearless Defenders. No time. I'm grand. And it's going to be... I mean, they're honestly saying something big is going to come off the end of it.
I don't believe it. Don't buy it.
They're keeping it super secret. Super secret to the point that they're not even getting an outside artist to draw it. Joe Quesada is drawing the end of the last issue so that what has happened stays only within that upper echelon of Marvel.
It's so secret, you come to realize that Marvel and DC are doing a crossover and Ultron's actually Superman. There you go.
Wow.
And then Mark's writing an epilogue one shot about Hank Pym right after that, and I'm like, I'm going to get that.
Okay. Oh, Hank's going to die. Cool.
Hank, obviously, I think, isn't that the obvious immediate assumption you make, that obviously time travel is going to be required to undo? I mean, there is, you guys haven't seen the Black Widow in this, like, time travel is happening.
They're not leaving her like that.
This is being undone.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to unhappen at some point here. And if time travel is involved, then obviously one would presume that going back in time and killing Hank Pym is the kind of solution Wolverine would suggest.
God, that's gonna
because that unhappens the Avengers and everything. And as much as the idea has been thrown around by wags on the internet, Marvel is not flashpointing their universe. Marvel do not play like that.
Yeah.
So I really don't know what the end is. And honest to God, off the back of these two issues, I don't care. I'm still gonna buy it because I'm a total fucking mug, and you guys know I am.
Well, see, the thing is, Marvel doesn't really need to, because Marvel now seems like it's been doing well.
Oh my God, there's so many. The hit to miss ratio of Marvel now is so high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Marvel, there's good stuff and there's crap stuff. I mean, you know.
I don't know if there's any honest to God crap stuff out of Marvel now. There's some uninspiring stuff, but I couldn't point at anything that I said is honest to God raw crap, like some of the stuff DC has served up.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, New 52. I mean, if you throw out 52 books, you know.
I'll see where it goes. I'll keep you guys periodically updated as it rolls along. But this is one of those artist-filleting books where nothing happens over long swathes, where the fact that 10 issues are coming out in 4 months is going to be a blessing.
This isn't going to be another Fear Itself, is it?
We are already in sub-Fear Itself territory. Fear Itself actually started strong.
That's true.
This is not.
And at least this one isn't saturating the market with tie-ins nobody wants.
At least it'll be over quick.
You know, that's the thing, is like, you can always say, Liz, so the fear itself was shite, but there are good repercussions as a result of it, because it kicked the market in the arse so hard that it forced them to completely reimagine and restructure how they do crossovers.
Yeah.
And frankly, right. I mean, if Age of Ultron is going to be our introduction to the idea of the fast-paced micro crossover, and we already know that the second one of these that is happening is Hickman and Chung on something cosmic involving Thanos, I guess maybe we could say something good of Age of Ultron as well, because sign my ass up for that one.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, so this is just the buffer in between, frankly.
All right. Great. Well, I'm glad we talked about that.
Yep.
Sure.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
Well, there you go. That's our show. Ken, thank you so much for, like, I mean,
no,
totally last minute, like literally 30 minutes before go. I'm like, Ken, are you busy? Come on the show.
Dan, I'm like, no.
For once, he's not working. Yay! So thanks for filling in. Appreciate having you here and being available. So glad that we could all be back, and me as well, because I've missed out on a couple weeks there. Between not being here and stuff, so it's great to be back. Feels good. But anyway, go to the website, fanboyversus.com. You can find all of our past shows there, all kinds of cool stuff. Follow us on Twitter at fanboyvs. You can get, we live tweet during the show, so that's one thing. And also you get links to joining the show live as well, which you can do every Sunday. Except during sometimes in daylight saving time and stuff, but it's usually 4 p.m. Eastern.
I don't even think daylight saving's correct for next week either, you know.
So, yeah, I don't know when it'll be right. But
It's actually the end. You are the last Sunday.
But you can follow our tweets, and then you'll sort of know, like, when we'll be there. So,
maybe sometime Sunday afternoon.
Because we had good chat with the chat this week.
Yeah, we had some good interaction with the chat, so please join in the chat. And we, you know, especially when we have a good discussion like we did this week. We like to get some interaction as well.
We can't promise we'll have one of those every week.
No, but when we do, they're fun. So that's why I say you've got to tune in every week, because you never know when you're going to get
talking about how the library system is screwing over the middleman.
That's right. I mean, they're screwing – not the middleman. They're screwing over creators, you know?
I'm sure somebody will offend somebody next week. So.
Oh, yeah. I will probably offend somebody today.
Go out of my way to offend somebody.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in the industry, but okay.
Yeah. I'm doing superhero time tomorrow, so I will guarantee I will offend people.
I'd personally offend
tomorrow. So, and that is the other thing. Make sure you tune in each week for Ken and I on Superhero Time. That comes out on Tuesdays. We talk about all kinds of cool toku stuff, but usually it's just your mom jokes and other pornographic sort of things. People making people eat weird food. You know, it's there's.
I don't know how that became a thing.
I don't know, but I like it. It's Giga Beetle's fault because he's the one that first tried something that I suggested, and it just went downhill from there.
So far downhill.
He's brought the pain on himself. I'm just the one that inflicts it.
It is true. He did listen to every single episode.
He did. So I sort of have this like BDSM relationship with Giga Beetle. Where, you know, I just kind of, you know, it's give and take. But anyway, so join in. So you can listen to Superhero Time. I think it's tokupodcast.com, I think, for the website on that. But it's also off at tfradio.net. Yeah. So, but you should tune in for that. So we'll plug for Ken and sort of me as well. But anyway, you know. So anyway, that's it. That's the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy Versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.